Welcome to the Brock Osweiler Show. I mean, the ChicagoFootball.com Bears podcast. I am Kevin Fishby, and I'm back better than ever. Big thanks to my pal and co-host Arthur Arkish for driving the truck last week with Hub Arkish, joined by our producers John Solly, Dan Mott, Nick the Intern. Of course, you can find all of our work at ChicagoFootball.com. Follow me on Twitter at KFishbane, F-I-S-H-B-A-I-N. Follow him at Arthur Arkish, A-R-K-U-S-H. And all our work at Bears underscore Insider. Arthur, I'm so excited to talk about Brock Osweiler and this Sunday's game. But I guess we should start and go back and talk about a pretty impressive 37-13 win over the Rams that I can tell you even the most optimistic of Bears fans probably never saw coming.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that. You know, most of the optimistic Bears media members probably didn't see it coming either. Referring to myself anyway, who picked another game incorrectly, but that's neither here nor there. It was a good performance. It was another big time step for a young team that may be a little bit ahead of schedule right now. So yeah, it was fun to watch. It was the most complete performance of the season, and a lot to dissect, certainly.
Yeah, just a brief on this show. We'll talk about, of course, Bears-Rams. We'll start previewing Bears-Broncos. We'll talk to Les Shapiro about the Denver Broncos. And then later in the show, we got Barstool Big Cat Dan Katz coming on to talk about the Bears from his unique perspective. And Arthur, this game in St. Louis, it was that first drive, 80 yards, 7 plays. And I just kind of was sitting there in the press box like, all right, here we go. This is, you know, this Rams team is good. They're fast. They're physical. They're young. You know, they're a playoff team. And then that Zach Miller touchdown, it's almost like Jeff Fisher freaked out and the Rams freaked out because they went way away from their game plan after that. And the Bears took full advantage. And clearly, I'm sure you noticed this too, there was no question which team had the better schemes and X's and O's in that one between the Bears and the Rams.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You know, you just mentioned Fisher. They got away from what they do well so quickly, you know, in part because the Bears kind of dictated the flow of the game. But no, I thought the Bears were clearly the better coached team. And you know, they had a lot of advantages when you look across the board. I didn't think most people would say that given just kind of the talent on paper, but you know, Jay Cutler under center, obviously just a massive advantage for the Bears. And you know, I thought defensively too, the Bears played a little bit more disciplined and you know, certainly tackled better and did a lot of things really well, which, like you said, a lot of that goes to the players, but a lot of that goes to the coaches as well.
So the Bears now are 4-5 back-to-back road wins over, you know, out of division teams. This was their first NFC win, only one. So they're 1-5 in the NFC this year. And the reason I bring that up is to tell you what we're not going to talk about in this podcast. I'm checking my producers, make sure it's okay. We're not going to talk about the playoffs. Is that okay with you guys, John Solly?
Fine. Are you all right with that? No, I'm convincing myself that it's really silly to talk about the Bears in the playoffs, and they're not going to happen. But
playoffs.
You look at the schedule. Okay, we're done. We're done.
I'm not going to name any names, but there's a rival podcast of ours. They're good friends of ours. They're just a different Bears podcast, and I'm pretty sure they talked about playoffs. But Arthur, if they beat the Broncos, let's promise our listeners next week we'll actually talk about the playoffs. Does that work for you?
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, okay. If you want to talk playoffs, we could talk playoffs.
No, I think there's a long way to go still. It's very encouraging what the Bears have been able to accomplish, but I'm still not sure they're better than the third best team in the division. And there's a lot of room a lot of ground to gain, if you will, before that becomes a truly viable topic. But, you know, a win Sunday would head them in that direction. So maybe this time next week, barring a victory, we can get into that that discussion.
Well, let's do our brief recap of Bears-Rams in the weekly 3-and-out.
1, 2, 3!
I'm going to give you to the count of 3.
Then shalt thou count to 3.
I'm going to count to 3.
1, 2, 5!
Lisa!
3!
3 in-and-outs! All right, one positive, one negative, one moment that mattered from the game on Sunday. Arthur, your one biggest positive.
Yeah, I hate to keep harping on the same topic here, but I thought the coaches, it was the best game for the Bears, and it starts up top with the direction they've been sort of put in by John Fox, Adam Gase, Vic Fangio, Jeff Rogers. You go across the board on a short week. John Fox had his club ready to play against one of the one of the league's more physical. I thought the Bears were the more physical team Sunday. Adam Gase was just brilliant. So much of the success of those Broncos offenses was getting the ball into the hands of their playmakers with room to operate. We saw that obviously 280-plus yard touchdowns. And just really, really creative play calling and really just minimized, I thought, St. Louis's pass rush. Vic Fangio, along the same lines, took the game out of the Rams' two proven playmakers, made sure they weren't the ones that were going to beat the Bears, and did it without his best defender. And then Jeff Rogers, I know he's taken a lot of heat in this town, but wasn't fooled on the fourth down fake. We did learn on that fake punt it was his decision to keep the defense on the field. Tavon Austin, one of the most explosive returners in the game, was not very effective. And aside from some Mark Mariani blunders, I thought special teams was very, very good as well.
Oh, you just took all seven of my positives. But there were a lot. I'll go ahead and just focus on Cutler then, because I actually found myself getting lost in what Lankford did, what Zach Miller did, and the way the defense contained Todd Gurley, that I forgot that Jay Cutler had a passer rating of 151, the best of his career. He's 19 of 24, so calm in the pocket. He had the long run as well and slid to make sure he didn't get hurt, something we're not initially used to. He usually goes ahead and will take the pain. But just another great game for him and such a good stretch. Now two interceptions in his last five games for Jay Cutler. What was your one negative from Sunday?
Yeah, they were able to turn it around quickly, but certainly that first defensive series to open the game, you said it, seven plays, 80 yards. The Bears looked totally clueless. So I guess maybe that's a little bit on coaching as well. But yeah, there were breakdowns all over the place. And if it was one game, fine, but it's actually happened three out of the past four games now. So it's something John Fox mentioned needs to be corrected. And, this staff has done such a great job kind of easing Jay Cutler's burden. But, starting with a 7-0 deficit early in the first quarter every game is not exactly doing that. So nice to see him rebound, but they need to get out of the gate quicker.
Yeah, you can't do that against teams like Denver, of course, also they'll face this week. I got to go with Mark Mariani. Obviously, he's a friend of the program, was a great guest on the show. Just had a rough time returning kicks. You got to hold on to the football, can't give it up. Now, in terms of his actual return yardage, I'm not going to pin that all on him, because you need to have the blockers, you need to have the special teams to create those holes. Not everyone's going to be Devin Hester. So I expect Mark Mariani to pick it up. Is he going to get a touchdown this year? I don't know. But you can't turn the ball over. You got to be sure-handed. Your one moment that mattered from Sunday.
Yeah, it was either the beginning of the second quarter, very late in the first quarter. The Bears are trailing 10-7. It's easy to forget they were actually trailing in this ball game after the first two series. Shea McClellan shows up with his first takeaway of the year. He said Monday it was a weight off of his shoulders. I thought it was sort of the catalyst for the defensive dominance from there on out. And they had a little bit of jitters early on. They were a little bit gassed. The Rams had, I think, 9-minute time of possession in the first quarter. So to see McClellan take that football away from Trey Mason, recover it on his own, it's exactly what this Bears defense needs more of, and just a huge encouraging sign from the defensive quarterback in his first game action in over a month.
Yeah, I didn't, I guess my moment did not matter that much in the grand scheme of things, but that third and 10 check to the toss to Jeremy Lankford to start the fourth quarter was, just such a great call. Great job by Jeremy Lankford, because if you watch it, the wide receivers weren't blocking because they didn't get the play call in. And we break that down on our website, Chicago Football Video Playbook, which you can go watch now. And that just obviously kind of helped put the game away. So that's it. We're done. Rams game's over. We're moving on to the Denver Broncos, who will be quarterbacked on Sunday by Brock Osweiler. The whole Peyton Manning thing this year, Arthur, is a bit of a shame for those of us football fans, because he's the greatest quarterback who's ever lived, and to see him like this is just sad. And, we were in the press box writing our stories, and I kept seeing scores fly up and tweets fly up. I couldn't believe what was happening. And, it's kind of a shame we're not going to get to see him. I think there's a lot of intrigue, though, into what Brock Osweiler can do for this offense.
Sure. Yeah. The Broncos had confidence in him to be the backup for 4 years now, and knowing the durability concerns that certainly accompany Manning in his latter stages, And at age 39, obviously he broke down his first four interception, no touchdown game. Sad to see if that is the way it ends, but exciting to see the beginning of the 6'8 Brock Osweiler tenure. I know that later in the show we'll hear from the Broncos specialist Les Shapiro, who talks a lot about the athleticism of Brock Osweiler, and I think that's where it starts. I think he is a better fit for what Gary Kubiak wants to do, and we'll see if he is kind of what gets this offense going. It's easy to forget. They're just a couple years removed from breaking all kinds of records, and a lot of that goes to Peyton Manning, but a lot of that also goes to the skill position talent in Denver that's kind of been shackled throughout Manning's struggles this year.
Later in the show is right now. Let's go ahead and go Behind Enemy Lines. Behind Enemy Lines. Joining us now on the ChicagoFootball.com Bears podcast, longtime Denver TV and radio guy Les Shapiro. Les, how long have you covered the Broncos for now?
Been here for 31 years, Kevin, so I've been out there for all 31 of them covering these guys.
Well, usually on the show, Arthur and I make fun of Hub because he's covered the Bears for 65 years, give or take a couple. Now it's probably like around years 30 to 35 years. But one of the things we like to talk about on the show is John Fox and his little Foxy-isms, as we call them, the way he handles the media. And you were around...
I know those well.
Yeah, you were around John Fox for 4 years. So do you have a favorite Foxy, little tidbit?
Yeah, the one that drove me crazy was, first of all, I never felt like he was being accountable for what went wrong. Maybe he was behind closed doors with his coaching staff and his players, but with the media, it drove us a little crazy because he would say things like, and this is probably my favorite one, they're paid professionals too. They get paid just like we do. That's the one that got me more than any of them.
We've gotten
He's stating the obvious. We want some insight here. Give us something we can sink our teeth into, and he rarely did.
Yeah, we've gotten that one a lot, and we also got the everything's a competition, everyone's competing, they're all football players, and a favorite one that the local talk stations have picked up in here is football is just 11 guys doing stuff. So.
Yeah.
He keeps.
Thanks for enlightening us, John.
So John actually did give me an okay answer when I asked him about Brock Osweiler on Monday, and I want to ask you, who's seen Brock Osweiler, whether it's in practice or preseason games, but you certainly know this Broncos offense. I mean, is Brock Osweiler going to unlock some things in this Broncos offense that maybe Peyton Manning could not do when he comes to Soldier Field on Sunday?
Yeah, I think there's a really good possibility of that. Look, we've all been talking about how the Peyton Manning style of offense that he ran for 17 years was a round peg trying to fit into Gary Kubiak's scheme, which was the square hole. And they just didn't seem to make a whole lot of progress on it. Now, some of it might have to do with Peyton's diminished skills, but Gary Kubiak wanted Peyton to be under center more. How about that? A guy in his 18th year who's not very athletic, under center more, taking 5 and 7 step drops. And it wasn't working. Gary Kubiak felt it would help the running game more because it would give the running back more options to find the holes. So it wasn't working. Peyton Manning went back to the pistol and primarily the shotgun, and that worked better, but then Peyton, was having his own set of problems. Gary wants his quarterback to be under center for the running game. He wants his quarterback to roll out both right and left to provide misdirection, keep the defense on its heels. Peyton didn't do that well either. So I think Brock Osweiler is a better fit for Gary Kubiak's system, but I don't know that Brock Osweiler will be more effective because, guys, frankly, we don't know much about Brock Osweiler. We haven't seen a whole lot from him over the last 3.5 years.
Les, that's a fascinating point. I was very curious and remain curious, obviously, to see Sunday if we do see more of Osweiler under center running that boot action or whether we see more of the pistol that Kubiak has kind of adapted to under Manning. I guess what I'm wondering, I've been reading that pretty much every Wednesday Osweiler's been getting the first team reps, which of course is very unusual in a Peyton Manning offense. He likes to take all of those. But that kind of makes me wonder if he's been taking those first team reps in the pistol and in this up-tempo offense, how quickly would it, how easy would it be able to get back and adapt to what Kubiak likes to do?
Well, until about 3 games ago, they were still running under center. Peyton was still lining up under center periodically and doing a lot from the pistol. So Brock Osweiler has been practicing. That's a great point. He has been practicing under center all off season, all training camp and all practice for the first 9 weeks of the season now. So going back to that won't be a problem for Brock Osweiler, I'm sure. I'll tell you, guys, there are a lot of Broncos defensive players who have compared Brock Osweiler to Joe Flacco, and it's not just because of his height. Osweiler has good arm strength, and Osweiler can move around in and out of the pocket, which Flacco can do as well. So, I'm not going to compare him to Flacco just yet. I'm not personally, but a lot of the Broncos defensive players have said that's who Osweiler reminds them of. And they've played against Baltimore a few times over the last few years, so they would know. And the other thing, guys, is so much emanates from the offensive line. You know that. And one of the reasons Peyton is so banged up is the offensive line has been so darn bad. And if the offensive line is bad again for Brock Osweiler, he's going to get beat up just like Peyton.
Well, Les, speaking of that offensive line, the run game is atrocious from what I can see. I'm starting to think, well, maybe these teams are stacking the box because they know they don't have to be afraid of Peyton Manning anymore. Is this an offensive line issue? Is this something that could get fixed with Brock Osweiler back there and the offense maybe opening up a little bit more?
No, you're right. They have been putting an extra man in the box. They've been moving a safety up on defense because they're not afraid of Peyton Manning throwing the ball deep. And it also clogs up the middle of the field where Peyton likes to throw. And it's worked very, very well. That and the fact that Peyton, again, has not adapted well to the new offense. So he's seeing defenses he's not used to seeing. That's a great point. Osweiler will be effective, again, only if the offensive line is good, only if they start using their tight ends, and only if the running backs start producing. Now, the running backs are very pedestrian guys. C.J. Anderson has had trouble staying healthy, so he's not even on the field a whole lot. And Ronnie Hillman still tries to take it outside, to do what he did in college 5 years ago. He's got great speed. He can be explosive once he gets to the second level, but they have a zone blocking system right now. You're supposed to run towards where the zone is going and then cut back. And he doesn't do that. He runs to where the zone is flowing, and then he tries to cut it outside. And as you guys know, in the NFL, it's really hard to turn the corner. I mean, the linebackers, the safeties, the defensive linemen are so fast, that corner gets shut down very, very quickly. So between the offensive line struggles, the fact that they're pedestrian running backs and they haven't adapted well to the zone blocking system, the running game has been crap.
Les, I know there's going to be a lot of questions about the Broncos offense, obviously, in Osweiler's first start Sunday. I think there are very few about what this Wade Phillips defense is capable of doing. I guess one of the few questions is the health of DeMarcus Ware. Is he going to be ready to go, or is he going to miss some more time? And then B, I know that even Bears fans are going to know all the Pro Bowl names, Von Miller and Chris Harris, TJ Ward. Tell us about a few of the under-the-radar guys. What about a Malik Jackson or someone like this Shaq? Is it Shaq Barrett who's really come out of nowhere to make a big impact?
Yeah, Shaq Barrett, an undrafted free agent out of Colorado State. Let me just tell you, broader view, it's a very athletic and a very quick defense. They're very, very fast to the ball. And I know you'll look at the line score from last week against Kansas City, and you'll see they gave up a lot of points. They gave up a lot of points because they were put in a very compromising situation by the Broncos' offense, which threw five interceptions and an onside kick. So Kansas City started with the ball in Denver territory on six drives. Their average yard line to start the drive was their own 48. So they only had 52 yards to go on a lot of their drives. So that's why the Broncos gave up a lot of points last week. I believe the defense can rebound. They're not going to have DeMarcus Ware back, I don't think. I think they might be saving him for New England, and even that's questionable. The Broncos play New England after they play the Bears. But the defense, it's an attacking defense. Von Miller has been getting double and triple teamed with DeMarcus Ware out, so he has been less effective. And that's another reason why both Indianapolis and Kansas City were able to score some points. Guys who fly under the radar, Brandon Marshall is a very good linebacker. He's all over the field. Danny Trevathan, another very quick linebacker, all over the field. Shaq Barrett, very, very quick, and has been getting to the quarterback. He's got a number of pressures and a number of hits on his resume so far. Darian Stewart has been solid at safety, covering the back end. And then Malik Jackson, you asked about. This is a really talented guy. This is a guy who we wouldn't be surprised if he grabs two or three sacks a game. And they're going to have to make a decision on him in the offseason, and I think they'll sign him to a long-term, nice money deal because I think he deserves it. Sly Williams has been playing fairly well at nose tackle. So, yeah, they've got a lot of Pro Bowlers. I'll tell you who you got to watch for on Sunday is T.J. Ward, and here's why. He's not very good at coverage, at pass coverage. He's a big hitter, and he's good against the run, but he's not very good when it comes to hanging out with tight ends and running backs. And from what I've seen, Cutler and the Bears these days, they like to throw to the running backs and the tight ends a lot.
They do, and you know, they've established another tight end in Zach Miller. We're talking to Les Shapiro, longtime Denver TV and radio guy, covered the Broncos for 3 decades, and Les also has some Chicago roots, so you know, fun game here for Broncos-Bears at Soldier Field.
Yeah, I'm born and raised, guys. I went to New Trier.
There you go.
And then spent a year at the University of Illinois.
And you could follow Les on Twitter at Les Shapiro, and I would highly recommend that during Broncos games, because Les, you get it from the Broncos fans a little bit. And I am curious, what is Broncos Nation like right now? Because just looking at it from an outside perspective, they have the defense, and now they don't have Peyton anymore, and you know, maybe this window is suddenly closed for John Elway to have a championship team.
Well, first of all, I have really thick skin after 37 years covering sports. So if they want to attack me on Twitter, bring it on. I'm fine with it. Broncos fans were booing on Sunday. They were booing a team that was 7-1 at that point. But the offense was so bad and Peyton was so bad, they actually booed. This is a fan base that has sold out Broncos games since 1969. Every single game. It's the second longest streak in the National Football League behind the Washington Redskins. But the fans, you know, they pay more money these days, and the expectations here are very high year after year. Their goal every year is to win the Super Bowl, and they have teams that are capable of doing it. So when the team doesn't meet those expectations, and when Peyton Manning looks that bad, even Broncos fans boo. And they were leaving the game early in the fourth quarter, but then again, it was a really nice day out. The game was lost. It was really aggravating for a lot of Broncos fans, so they went home and they started dinner early. I don't blame them.
Les, the Bears are trying to run the table against the AFC West. They're 3-0 against John Fox, Adam Gase's former division. I wonder how big of an element that will be in Sunday's matchup. I would imagine no opposing staff knows Brock Osweiler better than obviously the Bears do. And do you think that's going to be a big dynamic in this game and a potential edge for the Bears?
Well, first of all, the Broncos are not like the other teams in the AFC West. That's why they have a 3-game lead. They're still a much better team than Oakland, Kansas City, and San Diego. So this is going to be a bigger test for the Bears. And from what I understand, the Bears aren't really good at home this year. They've only won one of their 4 games at home, right?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
It's correct.
Yeah, they're 3-1 on the road. As far as being clued in to what the Broncos can do on offense, I'm not buying that. I know on the face of it, John Fox and Adam Gase and a few other guys on that staff know the Broncos personnel, but they don't really know what the Broncos are running these days, number one. That's the first big thing. It's a totally different offense. You can see it on tape, but you still don't have the feel for it that you would have had if, say, Adam Gase was still here and they were running the same offense and John Fox was coaching against them in that situation. And then the second thing is we don't know what Brock Osweiler is going to be like in the game. And John Fox and Adam Gase really don't know that either because he's never started. He's never taken meaningful snaps up until last week. So on the face of it, yeah, you would think that Fox and Gase would have the advantage here, but they really don't because they haven't run into these two things, Gary Kubiak's offense and Brock Osweiler at quarterback.
We're going to wrap things up now with Les Shapiro talking Bears-Broncos, and I want to wrap up, Les, by going in the time machine a little bit. 2011, last time these two teams met. In Chicago, it's called the Marion Barber game, when he didn't go down in bounds.
I call it that too, Arthur. There you go. Marion Barber game.
And now I know, so I want to take you back to that game and what you remember, because for Broncos fans that follow Les on Twitter, he's a huge Tim Tebow guy. And this was just another big win for Tim Tebow. What do you remember about that that fun game?
Well, you mentioned Tebow. To me, that game is the game that took Tebow mania to the next level. Think about this. If Marion Barber doesn't step out of bounds in regulation, the Bears win that game. If Marion Barber doesn't fumble the ball in overtime, the Bears win that game. if Matt Prater doesn't miraculously hit 2 50-yard-plus field goals in regulation and in overtime, the Bears win that game. Of course, all the Tebow maniacs say they won because of Tim Tebow. But what that did was it gave the Broncos another win and allowed them to eventually win the division and then go on and have that game against Pittsburgh in the playoffs where Tebow hit Demaryius Thomas on the long pass and they won. So Tebow mania never would have reached its heights if the Bears win that game, because the Broncos wouldn't have won the division and they wouldn't have won a playoff game. And that's why I really hate Marion Barber, because I am not and never was a Tim Tebow fan. I thought the whole thing was a fluke and a farce. That game made him what he was in the NFL that year.
Well, the last team to start 2-5 and make the playoffs was those Broncos, and that's what the Bears are trying to do. Do you have a pick by any chance? You have a prediction for Sunday, Les?
Yeah, I think they're going to make sure that they run the ball a lot against the Bears. Bears have a lousy run defense, don't they? Aren't they ranked like 26th in the league in rushing defense?
Yeah, they've played well the last 2 weeks, but as a whole, it hasn't been great.
All right, so I think the Broncos are going to try to run the ball 25 to 30 times, which they have not done the last 2-3 games. I believe they're going to tell Brock Osweiler, take the sack or throw the ball away. Do not turn the ball over. And the Broncos defense, I believe, is going to rebound against the Bears. So I believe the Broncos are going to win a tight and a low-scoring game, and I think it's going to be somewhere around 23-22, 20-19, something like that. And that's not a homer call. I still believe the Broncos have a better team than the Bears.
Yeah, and you're not going to be alone there on that one. Les Shapiro, a longtime Denver TV and radio guys, covered the Broncos for a long time, helping us out preview Bears-Broncos. Les, thanks again for your time.
Thanks, Kevin. Thanks, Arthur. Enjoyed it.
All right, a lot of good stuff there from Les Shapiro, who always says it like it is when it comes to the Denver Broncos. Been around that team for a long time. And Arthur, let's jump right into our matchup breakdown. This is a really interesting one to do, and you can read a more detailed version of this in your Thursday Chicago Sun-Times, Daily Herald, Northwest Herald, lots of other newspapers whose names I can't remember at this time, so hopefully their editors don't get mad at me. Anyways, Arthur, Bears run game versus Broncos run defense. Jeremy Langford, Kadeem Carey have looked good. I'll say this, though. The Rams got their stops behind the line, and the Bears can't really afford to give up a lot of those opportunities against the Broncos, who have a very, very good front seven and have one of the best yards per carry allowed in the game.
Yeah, it's actually, kind of similar, not schematically, but just in terms of talent in that front seven to what they saw last week in St. Louis. And I think because Jeremy Langford has been such an instant success, Kadeem Carey has provided a nice counterpunch. It's easy to forget that the Bears are still hovering right around or right below 4 yards per carry. So this is going to be a tough matchup. We know the Bears will be committed to the run, but you talk about guys like Sylvester Williams and, as Les just mentioned, a really good inside linebacker tandem in Trevathan and Marshall. And I think it's going to be tough for the Bears to gain an edge here. We'll give a slight edge to the Broncos.
And I'm not expecting Matt Forte to play. That could always change. He's a quick healer. Right. He's a hard worker, obviously, to get himself better, but I'm expecting
short rest after Sunday. Fox may say that doesn't matter, but it's hard not to think that he'll be looking ahead to that Thanksgiving game against the Packers. True. With regard to Forte.
Very good call. And we also know John Fox won't tell us anything about he was listed as questionable last week. I had no doubt in my mind Forte was not going to play against St. Louis. All right, Bears passing game, Broncos pass defense. I think, Arthur, this is strength against strength. The Bears have moved the ball through the air against everybody. As long as Jay Cutler's been in the game, they've found success through the air. Maybe they get a healthier Alshon Jeffrey, but boy, those cornerbacks, you talked about them earlier in the show, that pass rush, even if DeMarcus Ware is not playing with Von Miller, the Bears have done a really good job of pass protection, but I still have to give the edge to the Broncos, even though I know the Bears will find a way to move the ball, but this Denver pass defense is too good.
Yeah, it really is. And, strength versus strength, sure. And that's if Alshon's healthy. He wasn't himself last week. And, you take away the 87-yarder to Miller. And I don't, the passing numbers obviously don't look quite as good. But a lot of fun matchups to watch. Again, assuming Jeffrey's healthy, I can't wait to see him go up against Chris Harris and Aqib Talib. But there is just so much talent on the Broncos side. And Wade Phillips does such a terrific job with the blitz. Cutler's been awesome against it thus far. But he's going to see some new things in that Denver defense, and I just think their cover men are too outstanding, and I think the Bears are too lacking after Jeffrey. So it's another edge for the Broncos here.
It gets interesting when the Broncos have the ball, because as we talked about with Les, we just don't know much about what to expect from this Broncos offense. When it comes to the Broncos run game, it's so bad. You look at their yards per carry, yards in game. Ronnie Hillman just hasn't been effective. CJ Anderson been a complete non-factor. The Bears run defense's numbers as a whole are not good. However, recent games, they held Todd Gurley to 12 carries for 45 yards. They hold Melvin Gordon to 30 yards on 10 carries. So they've been really good the last 2 weeks. How do you see this matchup shaping up for the Bears?
Yeah, I mean, you said it. Until we see the Denver run game have some success, I don't know how you give them an edge over the Bears. The one thing we can say is that Gary Kubiak is similarly committed to that run game, if not more so, than John Fox and Adam Gase. So I know he is seething with the way things have gone thus far. And in terms of scheme, you're going to see a lot of similarities. We saw a lot of the zone blocking in St. Louis with Gurley. Obviously, the Bears shut that down. Kubiak is one of the disciples learning under Shanahan. So you'll see a ton of that. They have some explosiveness with Hillman getting outside, but Les said he's a little too, he's a little too willing to go out there, even if there's stuff inside. So with Shea McClellan back with that defensive front making some improvements over St. Louis, if they can find a way to build on those, I could see the Bears having an edge here and putting the game into Brock Osweiler's hands.
And when the game is in Osweiler's hands, that matchup, the pass defense, look, the cornerbacks are playing well. Tracy Porter, Kyle Fuller made some nice plays. Bryce Callahan was targeted a little bit, but he had some sound coverage. The pass rush, I was pretty impressed the way they knocked Nick Foles around, hit him 10 times. I think Osweiler was more mobile, but you also want to get him outside the pocket and really rattle him a little bit. Demaryius Thomas is one touchdown this year. Emmanuel Sanders is probably, I think, the biggest threat for Denver. If they line him up against Bryce Callahan in the slot, I think that's their best option. But the way that offensive line's been, I swayed this pendulum right here to the Bears' passing defense.
Yeah, I would agree with you, and that's even without knowing, the status of Pernell McPhee. As good as Acho and Houston and Young were, this is a game where the Bears really need to have McPhee back, their best pass rusher, to take advantage of the issues that the Broncos are having, on the edges of their offensive line. Chris Harris at left tackle has been terrible, and they've been shuffling guys in and out, and that really was part of Peyton Manning's problem. So we'll see. There's some blue chip talent, obviously, in Demaryius Thomas. That's going to be a fun matchup, I would imagine. A lot against Tracy Porter and Fuller against Sanders and Callahan, like you said. But there's just too much unknown right now with Osweiler. There's too many issues with that offensive line, and the Bears are surging in their secondary, and I think they do have an edge here as well.
And we'll talk about special teams a little bit later in the show, but this is definitely going to be an interesting matchup. When you talk about Bears versus Broncos and so many of the coaches, the familiarity, I'm expecting Dave Magazine, the Bears offensive line coach, is going to be hanging out with the Bears defensive linemen and telling them, what to look for on Sunday. And Adam Gase will be doing the same thing, talking to defensive players. I mean, these guys know the Broncos so well. And look, I don't think it's that much of a coincidence that the Bears are 3-0 against the AFC West. Now, two of those, I should say all three of those games were essentially coin toss games. And you look at the Chargers, the Chiefs, the Raiders, all came down to the final play. But there is that factor, and you got to rely somewhat on what Fox and Gase and Fangio, Jeff Rodgers can do. The one thing when it does come to special teams, Broncos kickoff coverage, very good. So field position could factor in, because I think this could end up being a low-scoring game when you look at what we just broke down, that the Broncos have the best defense in the league. The Bears, we don't really know what to expect out of Brock Osweiler. The Broncos have been one of the worst offenses in the league, and that could be, make this game kind of go under, I should say, about that. The over-under is at 41.5, John Sally.
Yeah, it is. And, Arthur, I mentioned this when we did the fantasy podcast today, that Jay Cutler this is one of the longest stretches of his career where he hasn't had a multiple interception game. And Arthur, I think you mentioned that the Broncos have gone a bit without a takeaway. So, yep. I'm picturing this this sort of Game of Thrones style meme that just says regression is coming. I think Cutler's due for a bad game against a bad defense. That's how I picture this going out when it comes to the Bears passing game versus the Broncos pass D.
And we just I'm curious to see DeMarcus Ware's status too. Mm-hmm. But one of the things the Bears have done all year is whether it's Cutler moving the pocket, whether it's these quick throws to the outside, the quick handoffs to Langford or Carey, stuff like that. They just find a way to neutralize opposing pass rushes, and it's kept Cutler upright. He's been able to move around a little bit as the season's gone along. And they just find a way to not let these really good defenses. You look at what St. Louis, you know, brought to the table. And the other thing, too, and Mark Mariani mentioned this to me last week. He said, when talking about the Rams defense, he goes, we know how good they are. We just have to keep going. We have to keep, you know, stick with our plan and keep moving. And they like to use the chopping wood reference that John Fox likes to say. You know, hey, just gotta keep chopping wood out there. Just gotta keep going after it. They knew they were going to get stopped. You know, Nick Fairley had a couple stops behind the line. Aaron Donald with a sack and a couple stops. But they don't abandon it. And last year, so often, we'd see the Bears just abandon whatever game plan they entered with, and then the game will be over. You know, sometimes part of that was because the defense gave up so many points, but this group, they're so confident in what they do. And actually, Chris Burke of SI.com, who was on the show a couple weeks ago talking draft, he wrote a good article this week about the way the Bears are just, everyone's buying into this system, these coaches, and it's bringing success to the team right now, and that's why they're 4-5. That's why, nope, we're not doing it. We're not talking about playoffs.
All right,
John,
fine.
You thought about it.
I was ready to jump in.
You thought about it. We can, you know, maybe that's a post-holiday conversation if they're still in it. They only have one NFC win. I said it before the season, the Bears coaching staff could just simply coach them to a couple victories, one, two wins. And it's so hard to really judge that. You know, the players have to execute. You know, and the Bears, obviously, every coach thinks he has a game plan, but the players have to actually, you know, go out there and do their jobs too. And so far it's worked. But this is another game, when you look at the familiarity, you look at Osweiler, that they might be able to do that again.
And really, this is the difference between an overwhelmed, overmatched coaching staff and a professional coaching staff that knows what it's doing.
We're going to shift gears here a little bit on the Bears podcast and bring in the man, the myth, the legend, Barstool Big Cat, Dan Katz from Barstool Sports Chicago. You can follow him on Twitter at Barstool Big Cat. Talking Bears, we're going to, you know, recap Bears Rams with you first, Dan. I'm curious from your perspective, from the way you watch the game, how surprised were you at what happened in St. Louis on Sunday?
I was pretty surprised. I was pretty shocked, mostly because of the big plays. I did not see that kind of explosive play coming from Zach Miller. I didn't see, obviously, Langford has shown that he's, you know, has the capability to have those kind of explosive plays, but he was also something special. I wasn't that shocked with Nick Foles being just a really bad quarterback, because that's what he is. But all in all, yeah, I did not think that this Bears team had the ability to blow teams out, especially when you look at the beginning of the season, how the game plan has been. It's been, you know, try to have a shot in the fourth quarter and keep it close, and they just blew the roof off that place.
And I read your post after the game, and you're a big Cub fan too, so you know about this idea of getting sucked in to something.
Yes.
And I am curious your mindset. Now, we've made it a pledge on this podcast. I became a dictator. I told everyone we're not talking about playoffs in the podcast. We could talk about it next week if they beat the Broncos. But I am curious your mentality, because for the most part, Bears fans are kind of like, okay, this is a competitive team. I can see into the future. I like what I'm seeing. I understand that it's not going to be a good year. But now, when you see what they did in St. Louis and you look at the rest of the NFC, are you jumping all into this situation?
So does that rule apply to me as well?
You can do whatever you want.
Okay, because I'm ready to talk playoffs. No, I obviously, if you know me, if you know the, my humor, I definitely have, I have an optimistic tilt to everything, and I like to spin things in a positive way. The Cubs, I actually do think that, you know, every year, that's a whole different story. But yeah, I think these next two games, if the Bears can win these next two games, why not? Because the NFL's just not that good this year, and there's just a mess load of teams at 4-5 and 5-5. The Falcons at 6-3. I think we can all agree the Falcons aren't a good team. So in any other year, when you think about years when, you know, the Bears didn't make the playoffs when they went 10-6, that's not this year in the NFL. There's going to be a 9-7 team out of the NFC. So I'm ready to talk about it. I can't believe that I got there on Sunday where I said to myself out loud, I think the Bears can actually beat the Packers on Thanksgiving night. Because I don't know about you, But I've had that game circled as the national embarrassment game where everyone laughs at us and the whole country is sitting down on the couch after eating their Thanksgiving dinner and saying, wow, the Bears are awful and look how bad they suck.
And wouldn't it be insult to injury because it's Brett Favre Day too? Yes. So you're going to have a lot of people with the Brett Favre memories / nightmares rolling in.
They basically would trot out their two, you know, Hall of Fame quarterbacks back to back while the Bears haven't been able to figure out the quarterback position in, you know, their entire history. So it would have been bad.
And Al Michaels is talking about the point spread in the fourth quarter. It's the only thing that you're hoping for. It's gotten crazy. And, you know, again, Dan, I let you talk about playoffs. I'm trying not to, just obviously being objective, just, you know, looking at this. But the other thing, too, and I'm really curious your take on this, irrational fan bases. And Bears fans, in my experience at times, have been when the team's doing well, suddenly it's Super Bowl time. When the team's doing poorly, I mean, there are people talking about John Fox getting fired after they were 0-3. Where do you rank the Bears in this city when it comes to these hot and cold, you know, going to such extremes when it comes to reacting compared to the way some of the other teams' fan bases are?
You know, I think it just speaks to how passionate Bears fans are. And Chicago is always going to be a Bears town. You know, obviously the Cubs' first World Series will be the biggest moment, but a Bears Super Bowl is right there. So and once the Cubs win one, it's back to just the Bears Super Bowl is the most important thing that can happen in the Chicago sports scene. So I think it speaks to the passion of the fans. I will say this year, I think most people are realistic. I think there's a lot of sarcasm about it. You know, obviously whenever the Bears have a good play, I usually will tweet out Super Bears or Bears are back. I'm obviously being slightly sarcastic. I know that they're not a Super Bowl team, but they're a lot more fun than I thought they were going to be, and that's kind of cool. So that there's definitely that. It's nice to be talking. I thought, you know, this late in the season, the conversation would be very different than it is right now.
Yeah, and I, you know, this one of those weeks, and you know this too from your prolific tweeting, it'd be nice to have a sarcasm font sometimes on the tweets. Like last week, I tweeted a poll, you know, is Zach Miller the greatest Bear ever or the greatest NFL player ever? And I immediately got some people telling me, whoa, slow down, it was just one play. I tweeted Shea McClellan, best draft pick ever, and a couple people said, whoa, you know, think about what he did the last three seasons. But I appreciate that you jump in there, too, because it does. It makes it a little more fun that way.
I feel bad for you guys who are a little bit more in the breaking news and a little more, you know, traditional journalists, because you can't have that kind of fun because you have people who like, freak out when you say that stuff. I get a little more leeway because I think people have come to expect that I'm just having fun with it. So it's a little bit nicer for me when I can start saying that stuff and people won't go as crazy for it. So I enjoy that part of Twitter for sure.
We're talking to Barstool Big Cat Dan Katz. You can follow him on Twitter at Barstool Big Cat. I'm not sure how many people in Chicago are not following you at this point. I want to talk to you about Jay Cutler because I'm going to be honest with you. The first time I went to your site was the Jay Cutler interview a couple of years ago.
Yep.
And it was April 2013. I actually went back and watched a little bit of it last night. And for one thing, just to get Jay in that situation where he's just off the cuff, relaxed, he obviously must like your site a lot to do that, because we never get to see that Jay, or very rarely. And now that he doesn't have his radio show on ESPN this year, we never get to see that Jay. I'm curious, what did you take from that experience, and what did you maybe learn about him, and different than you maybe didn't know beforehand?
Yeah, so Jay and I have we've been friends for a few years now. I actually don't know. I might be slightly out of the circle of trust. I made a joke about Andy Dalton over him in the preseason. It was a joke, but whatever. We are still friends. And I think people don't really, you know, he gets a real hard time in Chicago. People obviously always like to blame the quarterback. I think they like to blame him more than most cities' quarterbacks, just because he might not smile all the time or he might not be a gung-ho type of guy. But I've been saying it all year, and, you know, everyone's ready to move on from Jay Cutler. When he's gone, people are going to not be happy because they'll realize quickly that the quarterback situation in the NFL is abysmal. And there's maybe a half a dozen guys that you'd say, okay, those guys can win a Super Bowl. Jay might be just off that top six, but the way he's playing this year, I don't see why he couldn't put it all together if the Bears are able to add a few pieces. But yeah, I think he's a little bit misunderstood, and I think he's gotten burned a few times by the media unfairly. And the natural reaction, anyone, you know, if you're the quarterback, if you're just a regular guy, would be to sort of, you know, close ranks a little bit and maybe not be as open with people. So I totally understand where he's coming from. And I think he's just a little bit misunderstood by the fan base.
Yeah, and I'm sure you get this a lot because of your relationship with him. But the number one question I get when people find out what I do is, oh, what's it like covering Jay Cutler? And I actually ironically shrug, which is Jay Cutler's favorite thing to do. well, which is why I think him and John Fox are perfect tandem, because John Fox loves to shrug. But I joined the beat in 2013, and that's kind of when a lot of people who have covered him for years saw the change, and whether it was having the second kid and just the maturity that he's been open and talking about. I find him fascinating, and I think he's very football smart, too. I really enjoy getting his take on the defenses he's facing, and I kind of understand his problem with some of the asinine questions, but I am curious to I just realized I've been curious about a lot of things in this interview, Dan. I fight with my roommate about this a lot because he was totally team Josh McCown in 2013.
Like a lot of people. Does he realize how stupid he looks right now?
He won't admit it. He just says that he doesn't watch sports anymore. That's his way of like ignoring Cutler's career year. But I wasn't taking sides. I was just telling him this is the way it is. Cutler's a better player, and they're going to give Cutler the contract. And that just drove him up the wall. Do you think this city will ever embrace him? I mean, I guess there's not a lot of time left, and if they're not going to make the playoffs this year, who knows how much time, many years he's here. But I don't even want to talk about all those records, you know, greatest quarterback in Bears history. But do you think the city is ready to just embrace a guy having a great season?
Well, I would say the short answer is he'd have to win a Super Bowl or get to a Super Bowl for that to happen. I think in time people will realize what he was maybe after the fact, which is too bad because they won't realize what Jay Cutler was until he's, you know, gone from Chicago. I will say this, and you just alluded to it. He doesn't get enough credit for being the consummate professional when it comes to how he handles interviews. I mean, last year was an absolute mess.
Yep.
And the way he handled every single interview when guys were backstabbing him and his coaches benching him, I mean, you can't ask for something better than that. And I think that there's definitely been a change than, you know, from the beginning of his career in Chicago, a little maturity. I know that I think it, the change, you can also go back the kids, but also the famous Devin Hester, he's not a go up and get it kind of guy. And ever since then, he's, you know, realized that you just don't say that stuff to the media because they're going to burn you. And even if it's the truth, Devin Hester is not a go up and get it guy, you don't say it. So I think Chicago probably won't embrace him fully unless we go to a Super Bowl. But with time, they'll realize once the next guy comes in, I'm banking on the next guy not being good, just knowing Chicago Bears history.
Right.
And once that happens, it'll be, oh, we wish the Jay Cutler days. Kind of like how people wish for the Lovie Smith defense days right now.
Yeah, and also this town, the backup quarterback is always the most popular guy in the city. Unless it's Jimmy Clausen and that mustache. And
yeah,
that's not working.
I don't want to dog Jimmy, but yeah, he's not the best.
Right. We'll leave it at that.
Quarterback.
All right, quick tangent. Redheaded quarterback Andy Dalton versus J.J. Watt. You had J.J. Watt's side in this battle. I don't know how you can't take J.J. Watt's side in the battle, but I hope it's not because Andy Dalton's a ginger, because I'm a redhead too, and we get dogged a lot, but I totally took Watt's side in this. I don't know why Andy Dalton got so sensitive.
As a ginger, you got to be pretty upset that Andy Dalton wasn't able to stand up there at the podium and you know, kind of brush that off, because he was a little too sensitive. I don't like J.J. Watt. I think he is the ultimate tryhard. I think all he cares about is looking like Superman on camera, and I think if I could pull the Houston Texans locker room, I would guarantee that most of them don't like him as well, because he's always, you know, he always finds the camera. I don't know if you were watched last night, but there was a moment when DeAndre Hopkins caught the touchdown and suddenly J.J. Watt's in the end zone. I don't think I've ever seen a defensive guy in the end zone off of an offensive touchdown. So that's the kind of stuff J.J. Watt likes to do. But yes, Andy Dalton was in the wrong. I also will say there's probably a little history there from the Rose Bowl, which I went to the University of Wisconsin, so I actually was in Pasadena for that Rose Bowl, and I even though J.J. Watt is also a University of Wisconsin guy, I hate him. So it's a no win. Let's just put it that way. Andy Dalton versus J.J. Watt, we all lose.
So I won't ask you about the Western Illinois basketball team.
That was, I mean, it's what are you going to do? That's that was a shocker, but you got to kind of just shrug. And maybe when I was a little younger, I would have cared a little more, but I don't. It's those kind of losses you just kind of laugh off at this point.
We'll wrap up with this before we talk some gambling. What do you remember about the Marion Barber game?
Not going out of bounds and the Tebow. That was the start of Tebow.
Yeah.
Was it not?
Well, it was near the end of the win streak, but our Denver guest we had on earlier mentions that just kind of that pretty much put them in the playoffs or got them in there, which just continued the Tebow legend.
But that was I remember being like, come on, this is not, and I knew when it was happening, I was like, I know they're gonna spin it as Tebow, but it's really just Marion Barber's stupidity. And I don't That was unbelievable, and I'll tell you what, I don't know what the Denver guy said when he was on before, but I wish the Bears were facing Peyton Manning on Sunday, because Brock Osweiler, he at least has a pulse. So he's not a good quarterback, but he at least has a pulse, and Peyton Manning, if you watch that Chiefs game, has no pulse. So I would have rather had Peyton Manning out there on Sunday.
Yeah, and I guess we didn't talk too much Bears Broncos big cap, but I will wrap up and my last question for you. I know your Twitter profile says life's too short to bet the under. It's 41.5 right now from Vegas Insider. I mean, look, number one Broncos defense, Brock Osweiler. What are you thinking here? It's a pick. I've seen pick 'em. I've seen 1 point on both sides. What are you thinking in terms of the spread and the over under?
I like the Bears. I also will, just full disclosure, I think I bet the Bears every single Sunday. It's one of those things where I don't like the Bears every week, and then on Sunday when I wake up and I just start talking myself into it. It's that optimistic thing we were talking about earlier. So I like the Bears. I have played a few Broncos unders this year because their defense is so good and Peyton Manning is so bad. The unknown here, obviously, is Brock Osweiler, because he could theoretically come out and actually run the offense. They have some nice weapons. So I'd lean under. I'd probably stay away. I don't, like I said, I don't bet unders, so I'd probably just not bet it and just put double on the Bears.
Well, there you go. That'll make you feel comfortable on Sunday watching Bears Broncos at Soldier Field. All right, Barstool Big Cat, Dan Katz, thanks again so much for joining us.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
All right. That was Barstool Big Cat. Go ahead and follow him on Twitter at Barstool Big Cat. John Sally, associate producer. I know you follow him. I mean, he's a big fan, and he'd be the first to admit that, but it's a fun blog. And look, the guy got Cutler unhinged to chat for a while. You got to give the guy credit for that.
He's one of the most entertaining follows you'll find on Twitter. If you view Twitter just as sort of an entertainment type medium, Barstool Big Cat is one of your first five followers, I think.
Yeah.
One takeaway I have from this whole interview, has the internet turned on J.J. Watt? I saw a bunch of tweets last night that were like, J.J. Watt's an inspirational poster come to life, and I hate it.
You know what? It's funny, because he mentioned when Watt went to Hopkins, and I actually didn't have like the look at me thought, but I was kind of curious, like, why is J.J. Watt all the way over there on that side of the field? Arthur's back with us, and Arthur, you used to cover the Texans. You actually wrote a great feature on J.J. Watt back when we were Pro Football Weekly. Are you kind of getting a little drained of the J.J. Watt love?
I thought it was kind of funny and all in good fun what he had to say after the game about turning the red rifle into a Red Ryder BB gun. I thought that was all in good fun. He was quick, I think, right after he said it, and the sideline reporter kind of said, whoa, and kind of had this look on her face. Immediately, J.J. kind of went to saying, oh, he's a great quarterback. They're a great team. But, you know, it's not unlike Cam Newton this weekend and everyone freaking out about his celebration. I think if you can't have any fun in this game, then what are they here for?
But, John, best celebration of the weekend goes to Drew Stanton.
Oh, easily.
Yeah. That was awesome.
That sideline dance was awesome. J.J. Watt, look, he's a great player. I'm not going to try to pay too much attention to the media love fest that goes on. But certainly, big win for Houston there. And I'm all for touchdown dances. And they can be as long as they want. They can take place whenever, you know, not when you're losing by 30, but like if you're winning and you score the way Cam Newton scored, I'm all for it. Have fun. You know, this is too much of the no fun league. All right, we've talked for too long, as Nick the intern shows me a timer. So let's head it to Arthur and I are going to give you our Bears players to watch, and we'll go around the room for our picks. Arthur, who are you going to be keeping your eye on Sunday as we return to Soldier Field?
Yeah, you know, in these podcasts, I try not to go with the obvious, and this week I'm going to go with the obvious. How is it not Jay Cutler? It's the NFL's number one defense, number three in scoring. It's Cutler's former team. He's coming off his best game ever. The storylines are endless, and I can't wait to see the way he responds to the type of play that the Broncos defense is going to bring to Soldier Field.
Yeah, it's a big one for him, and if he keeps this up, it would be something else. I'll go on defense. I'm going to keep an eye on the three corners, so I'll make it players to watch. Bryce Callahan, Tracy Porter, Kyle Fuller. I thought they played very well against the Rams. These are much better receivers in Denver with Emmanuel Sanders and Demaryius Thomas. Brock Osweiler's got a strong arm. Remember, this is a pass defense. They gave some big plays against Minnesota and Detroit. So, you know, they can't afford that on Sunday, so I'm curious to see how – I gotta stop saying I'm curious to see things. I'm like Curious Kevin over here. It's going to be the new name of the podcast, and then no one will listen. All right, let's go get our picks around the room. Let's start with our main man, our top producer, the man who runs the soundboard like nobody else, Dan Mott.
Thank you, guys. You know what? Each week I pick against the Bears. I've been told for the past couple weeks that that makes me a pretty bad Bears fan.
You a hater.
Yeah. this week I am going to go actually with the Bears.
Now you're a homer.
Yeah. I hope. I originally picked against them, and I thought, well, I'll pick against them. I hope they can prove me wrong, but I'm going to go for it. I got Bears 24, Broncos 21. We'll see how it goes.
All right, Nick the intern. He hates giving scores, but he'll at least give us his winner.
Well, I was going to give a score, but since you put that in, no score today. So I got to stick with it now. I've been high on the Bears the last 2 weeks, and I really don't see reason to pick against them. I mean, Jay's getting real hot right now, and I really don't know what Brock's going to do. And I took the same way I did last week with the Rams and not knowing Nick Foles, so I got to go Bears.
All right, no haters, two homers. John Sally, you going to keep the trend going?
No, I'm not.
Boy, you got a hater.
Yeah, and look, I really do appreciate what Cutler's done this year. I think it's been his best year in his career, and I think people don't appreciate it enough in this town. That said, I think he's going to throw multiple interceptions against an amazing defense. I think it's probably Denver 21, Bears 17. You know, I think Cutler will continue to have a really good year after this game, but like I said, regression's coming for this one.
Okay, Arthur Arkish, who you got?
Unlike Nick the intern, I can find a million reasons to pick against the Bears this week, and even so, I'm not going to. It's been a lot of talk about the familiarity of John Fox and Adam Gase. What about Vic Fangio getting a quarterback in his first ever start? I think Fangio is going to have some tricks up his sleeve. I think Jay Cutler is going to be up for the challenge, and I'm going to say Bears 23, Broncos 20 in an upset.
Those of you who listen to this show just to get Hub's prediction, I've got it for you. He went against Arthur. He said Broncos 23, Bears 16. He says, I'm fine guessing wrong when the Bears lose if all the matchups are against them. Even without Payton, which roster would you rather have? That's Hub Arkish's pick. He was traveling this week. He'll be back on the podcast next week. I went back and forth in this pick, and I was so annoyed with myself because I don't really – I mean, I do pay attention to the pick, but I don't care what my record is. But I went back and forth, and I eventually just went with the Bears, the home team. They're riding high, and this Broncos offense is so bad right now. And I think if the Bears can stop the run, put Osweiler on third and longs, and they've stopped the run really well the last 2 weeks, it's going to give him an edge. And as I mentioned earlier, no defense has really completely stopped Jay Cutler. So we'll see what the number one defense can bring. I like these weird scores we're getting in the NFL this season with the new extra point rules. So I'm going Bears 19, Broncos 18. That'll do it for this edition of the ChicagoFootball.com Bears podcast. Don't forget, for all the best Bears news analysis, visit us at ChicagoFootball.com. Follow all of us on Twitter. go to iTunes and subscribe. Give us a rating so that way you will never miss an episode. We want to thank our sponsor, your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. Who says Black Friday should only be one day of great deals? Chevy's Black Friday sale is on right now. Check out all of the Chevy truck selections at ChevyDriveChicago.com today and drive what the Hall of Famer Dan Hampton drives. Big thank you to our guests on the show, Les Shapiro, Talking Broncos, and Barstool Big Cat Dan Katz from Barstool Chicago Sports. Dan Mott, executive producer. We got Nick, the intern, associate producer, John Sally. For my co-host and partner in crime, Arthur Arkish, I'm Kevin Fishbane. That'll do it. We'll see if the Bears win. Maybe we'll talk about playoffs next week, right here on the Bears Podcast.